Hello and welcome back to the Growth for Good podcast. In this episode, I'm joined by Serena from D&H Law, a firm rooted in the Highlands and Islands and deeply connected to the communities that it serves. Serena's company works across family law, guardianships, conveyancing, and private client services, and she brings a thoughtful and human approach to legal practice at a time when the profession is changing fast. So we talk about what modern legal services really look like in rural and island communities, how technology can support people rather than replace them, and why trust, clarity, and personal connection still matter. We also explore Serena's own journey through the profession, her leadership role within the Law Society of Scotland, and what it means to build a legal career in the north of Scotland without having to leave home. We're going to jump straight into the conversation, where Serena begins by talking about the breadth of her work and the realities of legal need in local communities.
Yeah, so I do mainly family law, along with one of my other colleagues. And then within the firm, we also have private client, which is wills, powers of attorney, executories, and we do a lot of residential conveyancing, so buying and selling houses for people. And we also do a lot of guardianships, which is what you're talking about, when people can't make decisions for themselves and they've not made a power of attorney. We can help by applying to the court for their usually family or friends to look after their affairs for them.
Now, that sounds like a lot of work, but of course you can't work all the time. Tell me a bit about the Serena who's, when you're not at D&H Law, what is it you enjoy doing, Serena?
Well, I live in Stromness in Orkney, which is a beautiful place to live, so I like walking around the shore. I have a dog, and she's quite old now, but in the past we used to do a lot of walking together. I also like going to the cinema. In Orkney we have a traditional cinema that shows modern hits, and then we have an independent cinema in Stromness called Westside Cinema, which shows more independent films, so that's very nice. And then I like going to live music, concerts, reading books, and just also watching TV and films.
So it's fair to say you're always on the go. And what's your dog's name?
She's called Roxy.
Roxy, yeah, fabulous. And very appropriate for a cinema lover.
I adopted her, so I didn't pick the name. But she's 12 and a half now, so she's getting a bit old and a bit not so firm on her legs. So, but she's still going strong.
So would you say it's a modern environment that you're introducing people into now?
Yeah, we are very focused on being as much paper-free as we can be. So all our systems are digital. All the mails that comes in get scanned, it gets saved onto a digital package, which is called Lawyer. And then it means the advantage for me is that I can work in lots of different places. So if I go over to Thursday for the day, I can see exactly the same as what I could see in the Orkney offices. So it's very handy, and it's a constant push of mine to make us as paper-free as possible.
And that sounds, that step towards making it a modern office sounds like something you're doing strategically. It's, you know, you're really upgrading things at the moment, yeah?
Yes, so our major project at the moment is the Kirkwall office, which is our main hub, is being redeveloped, redesigned. Some structural work, some sort of necessary repairs, but also rewiring, new electrics, everything that makes it fit for the 21st century and beyond. So it'll be quite a difference, because it was a very old office with a lot of wood chip, a lot of cracks in the walls, the floors weren't very even. So our intention is to make it a place that's really nice to work in.
And is that, does that also tell a story about the way you look to do your business, where you're looking for constant improvement, you're looking to make sure you're doing the best every time you can, every step you make, it's taking your business forward, yeah?
Yeah, and that's definitely what we're striving to do, is to try and keep an eye on what's going on with technology and with different things, and try and bring it in an appropriate way. Trying to give people the best possible jobs we can. So, artificial intelligence is a very hot topic in the legal profession. So things like bringing in appropriate use of AI, which can make people's lives easier, but it's not going to be a threat to their jobs. It's just going to make their jobs better, make them be able to work more efficiently, which is I believe, really good.
So I think that'd be a really interesting thing to explore a bit further, because obviously with AI coming in, people are concerned that it's going to do things. I would imagine in the law business, you've got to be really careful about the information that you use and take forward, and therefore you certainly wouldn't be able to rely on AI. But there are probably some automated tasks and things that make it a bit more useful, as they are in every other business, that make it a bit more useful for it.
Yes, we have to be obviously very, very careful about GDPR, data protection, making sure that nothing gets out of our systems that we don't want to get out. That's something we have to be really careful about. But we have found some uses in terms of particularly digital dictation. So in the very old days when people would speak into tapes or into dictation machines, rather than doing that now, we are using kind of very small little machines that you can record on, and then they transcribe automatically. And I'd have to say that they've been very impressive compared to systems we've used in the past. But we're introducing things very gradually, and we're also making sure that everything is compliant with GDPR.
A lot of double and triple checking.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And certainly there's obviously some very well-known cases and issues where people have used AI for legal research and it's come up with things that are being totally false. So you have to be very, very careful.
So you would assure people that when they're dealing with D&H law, what you're going to get is a real experienced, trained human being looking at the detail and making sure that's what they get.
Yeah, I mean, what we really want to be is a firm that's in people's local communities, that is available for people to speak to communicate with, and to provide a personal, having that personal service is what we think is really important to make sure that firms like ours survive, especially as we expect that AI will become more accurate. It'll stop making things up so often. So we have to differentiate ourselves from the AI and from what you can just get on Google. And we think that the personal service and having nice welcoming offices and nice welcoming people is how we do it.
You specialise in family law, as we've discussed, and people with an incapacity for work. What does that mean? What does it involve?
Yeah, so there's quite a lot to it, as you can imagine, but the family law side is mainly helping people where they have a breakdown of relationship, including marriage, but also cohabitation, which may or may not involve children. So if there's children, we're looking at arrangements for where the children live and time they spend with the parent they don't live with. And then in terms of the financial side, we're looking at how the assets of the marriage or cohabitation are divided. And then the guardianship stuff, that just came along as part of that court work. And then we've developed that into actually acting for people. So if people need a guardian and they have no family or friends that can do it, then we do the financial side and the local authority do the welfare decisions. So.
And I'd imagine that people feel pretty comforted by the fact that you've got that journey. I mean, it's not often explicit to people, but they can probably sense when they're speaking to you and your colleagues that there's that kind of level and care of experience and that development, that understanding of how to do this from the grassroots to where you are just now.
Yeah, and I think it gives people, if we are saying to people you need to make a will, or you need to do a bit of conveyancing, transferring property as part of family law, then they know that that's something I've done in the past. While I don't do it now, I pass it on to my colleagues. We can give them that kind of holistic advice. So it's quite useful, I think.
And you started out as a secretary, so you must know everything, all the nuts and bolts, all the way through to what you're doing now in terms of the legal side.
Yeah, so it means I've seen the firm from the bottom right up to the top. So I think it does give you quite a good perspective and a bit of sympathy and a bit of empathy for people that are doing all the jobs in between.
But it's quite an inspiring story for others. It might, start off. Did you think I'll get a job in a law firm and then I'll go through my training? Was that a plan you had? Did that just develop as you discovered what was available?
Yeah, so it was just organic, because I came back from, I went to university for a year and I didn't enjoy it. So I went to Australia because that was about as far away as I could get, because nobody was very impressed with me having dropped out of uni. So I had to escape.
I had
to go get away for a wee minute. And then when I came back, I thought, well, I better get a job before I go back to uni or work out what I'm going to do. So I got a job, and then I was enjoying it and getting on quite well. And then I didn't know when I started, but you can do Law Society exams. So you do 8 exams as part of a 3-year training contract. And that enables you to go on to do the diploma and legal practice. And then you can do a 2-year traineeship, which is what everyone does. And then you're qualified. So it was offered that I could do that. So I was very keen to do that. And then I ended up doing my diploma in Edinburgh for a year and then coming back to train with the firm. So it was just something that happened. I didn't plan it. I never particularly thought I'd be a lawyer. I didn't really know what it was all about. None of my family or anyone I know was a lawyer. So, it's just organic, but it's good because now we have others in the firm that have gone through that same path, which has been really nice because it's generally, I think most people assume you have to go to university, you have to leave home, but you don't if you don't want to.
Leading a law firm and dealing with client work, that sounds like quite a heavy load. You know, what's a typical day like for you? How do you balance that out?
Yeah, it really depends where I am. So if I'm in Kirkwall, which I used to be there 80% of the time, but now with doing more of the Law Society and different things, I'm not there as often. So if I'm there, I tend to be in client meetings most of the day. And then if I'm not in Kirkwall or not in one of our offices and working remotely, I tend to be doing more client work. And then in between I try and fit in the running the business. So I try and dedicate a morning or a week or so to the actual thinking about the business, working in the business. But it does tend to be more ad hoc. So
when you say ad hoc, but your organisation skills must be pretty good to be able to balance all that.
Yeah, I just need to, it just depends. So for example, last week it was quite a lot with speaking to different people, trying to iron out different problems, make things run as smoothly as I can. But I'm hoping this week, for example, it'll be a bit quieter on that front. There won't be, it's maybe more reactionary than anything else. And if things are running well, there's no, say, HR issues or people issues to deal with, then I do try and check in with people, just make sure everyone's doing okay. And I try and do that either in person, on Teams, or just by phone. And then there's obviously the regulatory side. So we have a lot of obligations to the Law Society, make sure that we fill in the correct reporting forms, do that kind of thing, make sure that we're up to date with all the things we have to make sure we're doing. So there's that as well. So
the impression I get from hearing you talking just now is a very strong one, that you feel that the members of your team are really important to you and that you want to involve them. Is that the correct thing?
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to ask them, I suppose, if that's true. But I do try to make sure that they're all empowered. My main thing is to make sure that they're empowered to do their jobs to the best of their ability and that they have confidence to just go off and do that without me being too prescriptive or micromanaging. Hopefully that's working. We do certainly have a really, really good team. A lot of part-time working and a lot of flexible working, which I think is necessary in this day and age. I don't think you would get very far as an employer if you just said you have to work Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, and that's it. I think being able to offer flexibility means that you keep better staff. So I do try and create an environment where everyone is supported to work to the best of their ability. If they want to do training, to do that. They want to do development, to do that. So we do try and promote confidence.
One of the things that's clear is that obviously goes outside of your team and D&H Law as well, because you've been working with the Law Society of Scotland for a long time. I think you're vice president at the moment. Tell me about that. I know there's something exciting happening soon, so tell us about that too.
Yeah, so I've been a council member for the Law Society representing the north of Scotland along with a colleague since about 2018, and then I was elected to be vice president, which I am this year, and in May I'll become president of the Law Society, which is very exciting. So I'm looking forward to that.
And then you get your own tune, or you
know, like that. That'd be amazing.
But that's quite an in-depth job as well.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about you being able to organise and balance these things, but the Law Society of Scotland, I imagine, is quite a heavy responsibility to have as well. As, I would imagine, for somebody like you, very capable, good fun, but also, you know, a bit daunting sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, it's just really what people ask me the most is, how am I going to balance it? And I always think, I don't really know, but it's going to have to happen. I mean, I have a great team in D&H and the Law Society team as well. We've got a new CEO, we've got some very good long-standing members of the senior leadership team, and the council members that are around are very supportive. So it'll work out, it'll be good.
That's quite a feather in the cap for a law firm to have the president of the Law Society of Scotland. I know you don't seek it in that way, but that really tells a story of, you know, the kind of, I think, the quality and reach that you've been able to achieve, that you can be, you put for, not only become vice president, become president of the Law Society of Scotland is quite an accolade.
Yes, and I think it's fair to say that I'll be the first president from the Northern Isles. From the Northern Isles. And I'm not quite sure. I know there was a president from Aberdeenshire, but certainly it's not been something that I've been aware of people from the north doing. So one thing I'm really keen on is showing people that you can do all these kinds of things from the north of Scotland, if that's what you want to do, or if you want to relocate and be based in the Central Belt, you can do that. But all these opportunities are here for people wherever you are.
And that speaks volumes for your love of people here in the north as well. I mean, I know it's the Lost Side of Scotland, you're covering the whole of Scotland, but I think that is a point that's well made, that it is really important, not only for us to have a voice in the Highlands and the Islands, but I think it again speaks volumes for your love of the area.
Yes, and I just want to promote working, living, having legal careers in the north as well, because there's, I think, a idea that you can only be a successful solicitor if you're in the Central Belt, and that's just not true. There's so much good talent in the north, and I want to promote that as well. And just so many opportunities for people now that there weren't when you couldn't work remotely, you couldn't do things like that. Although it would really, really help me if ScotRail could sort out their Wi-Fi.
And the LMER.
Oh, well, yeah. Just a plea to train companies, because that would make my life so much better.
Based in Stromness, but you're obviously doing services, you know, in other parts of the Highlands as well. And do you think it's important for people to be able to get access high quality legal services in areas where, you know, the alternatives for them, you know, might be limited in the past, and you're providing a valuable service for them now?
Yes, definitely. I think it's really important that all communities have access to high quality legal advice. Ideally, lawyers that are located within the communities, that know the communities, that sponsor local events, that are involved in local boards. I think these things are really vital. And I think it really helps communities to have lawyers embedded within them. They probably maybe don't necessarily think so, or don't necessarily appreciate it, because a lot of the time you just go into your life, you don't really need any kind of legal advice, you're not thinking about it. But when people do need legal advice, I think I hope that they appreciate being able to come to a local firm and see people locally. And we do have offices in Kirkwall, Stromness, Thurso, as well as people working remotely in Elgin and Inverness. So we do cover quite a lot of the Highlands. And with the legal aid work particularly, not a lot of firms in the Highlands do that anymore. So we do a bit of that up in Shetland and elsewhere in the Highlands. Although, because of the shortage of legal aid solicitors, we do tend to be quite careful as to the areas of geographical areas where we take work on, just so that we don't spread ourselves too thin.
Yeah, tell us a wee bit about some of the things that pop up for you.
So probably that all lawyers are kind of older men. That's probably quite a good one, in stuffy suits. Mm-hmm. I think that's still a bit of a misconception. or that coming to solicitors is going to be intimidating or a bit scary. Quite a lot of what we hear is, oh, that was easy. You know, especially if people come in to make a will or power of attorney, it's quite often something that people find quite daunting, quite challenging. But they often say, oh, that was really easy, you made that process really nice. So I think what I want to sort of make clear is that you shouldn't feel uncomfortable and you shouldn't feel daunted.
Because people are naturally concerned when they come to
yeah.
when they're dealing with issues of the law, because it's hairy, isn't it? You get yeah. it wrong, there can be consequences yeah. and things. But what you're saying is that many of the people that come into you actually are coming around saying, well, it's quite an enjoyable experience.
Yeah, they're probably not thinking it was enjoyable quite, but they are thinking it was a lot better than they expected.
In comparison to their expectations. Yeah.
And I think as well, if you come to a solicitor and you walk away thinking, I have no idea what that person just said to me, then the solicitor's doing it wrong. You know, we need to be speaking to people in a way that they understand. And if you are at a solicitor's and you don't understand what they're saying, then you shouldn't be afraid to ask them to explain something in a different way. Some things you do have to explain some really complicated concepts to people, but it's up to us to make that accessible.
And what would you suggest to people if they are feeling a wee bit under pressure, a little bit kind of like bamboozled? You know, you were saying ask about it in a different way. What's a good way to actually stop it and an easy way for them to stop it and say, can you start that?
Yeah, I think just being honest and just yeah. saying I'm not quite followed that, I didn't really grasp that, I don't understand. Then if you're in a good solicitor's office, they will try and explain it in a different way, mm-hmm. Or they will try a different tack. We're also trying different ways of tailoring advice, particularly in power of attorney, because there's a lot of people that come for a power of attorney that they still have the ability to make a power of attorney, but they may have a learning disability or other issue. So we are now working to try and make those kinds of documents easier for people to understand, plain English, and also make sure that they have written clear, plain English, easy to understand advice appropriate to what they can digest and follow. So we are trying to tailor ourselves to, you know, different types of clients that we have. But you know, it's, I feel the same when I sometimes go to different professionals. I think I don't know what they're talking about. So I know it can be quite daunting and quite scary to just say, no, can you try and explain that to me?
You would definitely say a DH, but any solicitor worth their salt would say, look, if you don't understand,
yeah.
I'm fine with you asking me.
Yes.
To explain how to come away.
Yes, exactly. What I do not want is people standing out in the street thinking, I just didn't follow any of that at all. That, yeah. You know, she just talked at me for half an hour and I've got no clue what she was saying.
Especially when these issues are linked to really critical to that.
Yeah.
To the way they feel about things or maybe even their circumstances going forward.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think solicitors have an obligation to try and make sure we communicate clearly, and even when it is a really complicated concept. And I think a misconception, coming back to that, is that there's just black and white answers in the law, mm-hmm. and there's just not. A lot of people say it's an art, not a science, and that's true, because you can give people predictions, you can say, I think the court will do this, I think the court will do that, and you can turn up on the day and a totally different decision can be made. And I think people are quite often shocked by the level of uncertainty there is in the legal processes. I think people expect it to be much more certain, much more clear than it sometimes is. So there is sometimes a lot of explaining of different difficult concepts and different levels of uncertainty that people don't expect. But as a solicitor, it's our job to get all that across to people.
So you try and prepare people as best you can for what's going to ultimately be an interpretation of the law by the court or whoever's yeah. arbitrating the decision.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. And that can be quite difficult, because I think people expect it to be very black and white, and for you, when they come in to get advice, they expect you to know, well, this is exactly the outcome you're going to get. But it's a system full of people and interpretation, so it's not quite that simple, unfortunately.
We've talked about your approach to your team and where you've been based and the kind of ethos that you take forward in general terms, but let me ask you, what are your values at D&H and your personal values in terms of how you take things forward? What drives you?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think for us it's about finding ways to provide better service all the time to our clients, but also being rooted in the local community, so making sure that we're giving back in the sense of sponsorship and being on local boards, things like that. So our values are really around our community and service to the community.
You're in Stromness, you've got a wide geographical reach in terms of rural communities. How do you feel you compare or compete with city firms, or don't you compete with city firms?
I don't think we compete with them directly. I think there are a lot of people in the north of Scotland who want to get advice from the bigger firms, and they can do that. They can afford to do it financially, and they just want to be able to get advice on lots of different areas, maybe more niche areas, and that's absolutely fine. We don't pretend to be able to advise on really niche things, specific things, and we quite often work with bigger firms. If there's that kind of work to be done, we can refer it elsewhere, and it's more working with people than working against them.
In your case, if you said to a client, look, we don't have the necessary specialisation for this level, you'll actually direct them to someone else.
Yes.
that you would recommend.
Yeah, absolutely. So recently a client came in and asked me about a charter party for a ship, which I have no idea about. So I was able to give them a few names. And I think that we all try and do that, where we try and work with colleagues in bigger firms who have specialities. There's a limit. We only have indemnity insurance, for example, up to £2 million. So any big deals above that figure, we can't do anyway. So we work with bigger firms quite often, things like that.
You've built up that network. It must be quite a strong network of people you work with.
Yeah, and that's probably one of the advantages of the Law Society. So recently over the weekend there, someone asked me for a recommendation for a solicitor in Kilmarnock, and I was able to provide it. And that's something we can do if people come to us and they have problems anywhere in Scotland. If we can't help, then we can find somebody generally who can. But a lot of high street firms further south, so particularly Glasgow, they do a lot of family law work and a lot of legal aid work, and they work a lot in the north of Scotland, and we typically, we work with them without any issue. There's a lot of high street firms all over Scotland. We're probably very similar to a lot of them. And then the bigger firms, they're just so much more able to have niche things that we can't provide, and then we're happy to work with them too.
It's clear from talking to you that you put a lot of store in the personal service, in the community service that you provide. You've referred to some of the things that you do in the community, and that's coming through really strongly. But obviously you've got a company which is in demand. You're talking about sometimes be a little bit more selective. What does the next 10 years hold for D&H Law? Where are you going to?
Well, the main thing is at the moment to get back into our main purple office. That'll happen next year.
That's being refurbished, is it?
That's being refurbished. Yeah. So that's next year's project. And then from there, we have a few trainee solicitors that I hope will stay with us. So I hope we'll be able to grow and the services that we can provide. And I hope that we will maintain sort of steady staffing levels. So I'm not looking for huge growth, I'm not looking for geographical expansion particularly. I would like to see quite a similar size, similar base, but with more qualified solicitors. But then I think pretty much every firm in the north of Scotland would like more qualified solicitors. So that would be my aim. I'm certainly not looking for to take over the world or even to take over Scotland, but just to consolidate and focus on our communities.
Well, let's talk about that careful move to new technologies, to the kind of new landscape in terms of the digital world. AI, as we've talked about before, is quite a big thing now. It's impossible to ignore for almost every business in terms of somehow aiding their productivity or helping them move across. You would be very careful to make sure the human side of it is very much at the forefront, and that quality assurance is still there. But where do you see AI making a difference in the legal profession in the next few years?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really hot topic. So, and opinions on it vary to people that think that it's just a flash in the pan, it'll never come to anything, and it'll all just wither away, to people that think it'll take, you know, a percentage of people's jobs, and it's going to be an absolute disaster and decimate the profession. I'm probably quite optimistic. I think it will enable us to work more efficiently, to work, to provide people with more interesting jobs. I mean, I'm not seeing a huge amount of people that are coming to me saying, I really want to be a touch typist. I really just want to sit and listen to dictation and type all day. And it's that kind of job I think that AI probably can already do. But there's not that many people that I think who want to do those jobs anyway. So what we're focusing on is using it to make people's jobs more interesting, more varied, to take away the kind of more basic stuff that people want interesting jobs. They want to be engaged in what they're doing, and I think that AI can help us provide those jobs and also just be more efficient so that we can do more for more people.
So Serena, you've talked a lot about the business, we just covered your values, about AI, everything else like that. We've talked about the geography and, you know, the people in the community. If I had to ask you to put into one sentence or into a couple of sentences why you feel people should use D&H Law as their legal partner, what would you say?
High quality legal advice within their communities. I think that's what I would say.
Okay. Serena Sutherland, thank you very much indeed for joining me in this podcast.
No, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Well, that was Serena from D&H Law. What really stood out for me in this conversation was Serena's clarity about what makes good legal support. It's not about jargon or size or distance. It's about people being listened to, understood, and supported by professionals who know their communities and care about the outcomes. Serena's approach to leadership, to technology, and to developing her team shows that modern legal practice can be both progressive and deeply human. And her journey from starting out as a secretary to become president of the Law Society of Scotland is a powerful reminder that opportunity does not have to be limited by geography. If you found this conversation useful, please do share it, subscribe to the podcast, and follow Growth for Good for more conversations with people working to build strong, sustainable organisations rooted in their communities. So thanks for listening, and I'll see you in the next episode.